Hey everyone, thanks for joining us on The Week in Review. I'm Nick Blumberg. Amanda Vinicky has the evening off. President Joe Biden stumbles his way through a high-profile showdown.
Dealing with everything we have to do with, look, if we finally beat Medicare.
Biden's shaky performance stokes Democrats' fears about whether he's a viable candidate.
If it's a fair and legal and good election, absolutely. I would have much rather accepted these, but the fraud and everything else was ridiculous.
Meanwhile, former President Donald Trump attacks Biden's record and repeats his lies about a stolen 2020 election.
If anyone tells you we have been here before, we have been in this building before, but this convention will be different. It will be exciting.
As setup begins for the Democratic National Convention, community organizations sound the alarm over the Chicago Police Department's mass arrest policy. Former Alderman Ed Burke gets 2 years in prison for corruption, and the Supreme Court hands down a decision that could help former House Speaker Michael Madigan in his corruption case.
And now to our Week in Review panel. Joining us are Justin Lawrence from Crane's Chicago Business, Ray Long from the Chicago Tribune, Sarah Karp from WBEZ, and joining us via Zoom from Washington, D.C., Pulitzer Prize winning columnist Clarence Page, also from the Chicago Tribune. Let's get right to it. Clarence Page, I'd like to get your reaction to the Biden-Trump debate last night.
Well, I must say I was rather shocked that Joe Biden came across so poorly. I've covered Joe Biden off and on since the 70s, the first time he ran for president, in fact. And, normally this guy is a former trial lawyer going way back, someone who's really got experience at public speaking. And on this occasion, he really was showing his age and was really producing all of the kind of tropes that the right wing through Fox News and others have been pushing. It was very disappointing, very disturbing to a lot of Democrats, and that's really what has got people talking now. And we're hearing the kind of talk that us old timers used to hear every time convention time came around. There would be talk about, will we have a brokered convention? In other words, something that won't be so predictable and will be really full of surprises because you got a real power struggle going on in front of the TV cameras. And we're hearing that kind of talk again now. But today, Joe Biden was speaking. Down in Virginia, I believe it was. His speech came across great, and the crowd was very receptive. So there's a lot of hope for Joe Biden fans that he can get past this right now. But it was very disturbing in the way that it really contrasted with the view many people had of how well Joe Biden handles himself.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see whether we have a convention this year that's more than just political theater. I mean, obviously, that was not the debate that Democrats were hoping for. Justin Lawrence, what was your reaction to what you saw?
Yeah, it's never a good look if the day after the debate, people of your own party are suggesting that you step aside and make way for someone else. Honestly, it was a tough night to watch. Joe Biden struggled to form his thoughts and really struggled to respond to some of the things Donald Trump was saying. And he maybe missed a moment to kind of characterize some of the outlandish things that President Trump often says to point out how outlandish they are, right? And then how do you contrast that with a former president who was much more lucid in his thoughts, right? But he spewed lie after lie and defended the January 6ers as patriots and said President Biden was very hard on them. And it was a tough night all around, I think.
Yeah, I mean, multiple false claims, many false claims that the former president made that he didn't necessarily get a lot of pushback on. Ray Long, what was your take on last night?
Well, I think you're absolutely right about no pushback on any of Trump's false claims. I saw a variety of fact checkers who listed dozens of examples of things that he got wrong, everything from people are wanting to or allowed to kill babies after they are born, or any number of different types of wild claims that he had, including, of course, election fraud. But there was just no good thing to say about how Joe Biden performed last night. And the reality, I think, is that Democrats are the type who are going to jump into a fetal position whenever they have a problem. This is a genuine problem, but they're acting like, you know, we ought to have the discussion now where our dad, should he really have the keys to the car or not, you know? So I think some people were only glad that he, because he would stood there sometimes caught on camera with his mouth wide open, I think people were just glad he wasn't drooling at times.
Oh, Lord.
A low bar, but something, at least that one he cleared. I mean, yeah, Sarah Karpa, a tough night. Do you think that Biden can come back from a performance like that?
Well, it's a long time before the election, so I'm sure that you can come back from anything, and, you know, it's still like 6 months, right? Mm-hmm. So I do think he can come back. You know, one of the things that I think would have really helped Biden is if he didn't spend so much time trying to point out the lies that Trump was making, which were great and many, and told a little bit about what he's done and what he's going to do. He really seemed to get tangled when he tried to tell the story of what he's done. And, you know, just from talking to my kids who are in their 20s, and they were like switching back and forth. I think there was some soccer game on that they were a little more interested in. But they were like, well, what does Biden want? What does Biden think? Or what has Biden done? They were asking me. And I realized that, you know, for just the normal person out there who's not like a scorecard, some people just want to know, like, oh, I've tried to cancel college debt, you know, some things like that. And I think that he would have done far better. I think maybe he got a little tangled in trying to keep, I mean, how many times have you said, that's just a lie? It's like, okay, but, you know, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, what have you done for me lately?
Nick, it also reminded me of the time that Ronald Reagan stumbled and looked for a moment, not as many times as Biden, but for a moment that he was confused and people started questioning his age. And the theory then was that, hey, too many aides tried to stuff too much into his brain, and he had to try to remember that. And then Nancy Reagan is said to have said, hey, just let Ronnie be Ronnie, because you stuff his mind with all these facts and figures he's supposed to spew out. It's almost impossible to do it in a debate situation. The other thing to remember here, I think, is that it would be very difficult technically to push him off the ballot or convince him. I mean, it would have to be an epiphany that he would say, oh, I can't do it. And then still it would be technically difficult because, remember, Ohio requires that the candidate be approved by August 7th. So that's even before the convention in Chicago, which would make it really difficult to lose the possibility of having Ohio in the mix.
Yeah, a headache on logistical fronts in addition to political fronts. Well, last night, Biden's surrogates immediately went on the offense, trying to portray the president as the right guy for the job. Let's hear some of what California Governor Gavin Newsom had to say.
To me, that was just daylight and darkness. I'm a little old-fashioned. I care about substance. I care about policy. I care about facts. I care about people being accountable to their lies. What I saw tonight was Donald Trump weakness masquerading as strength.
Clarence Page, as you mentioned, the president, you know, came out at this rally today, said, I'm not a young man as I once was. I'm not as strong a debater as I once was, but I'm still the right guy for the job. I'm the one who tells the truth. Is that going to be enough to quell nervous Democrats?
Well, I guarantee you, Joe Biden's not going to rest until he does everything he can to try to get that message across. Again, I'm after years of observing and covering the guy and talking to him, you know, I was really shocked by how out of it he seemed last night. And I mean, really answering those stereotypes people have of an old man, being a doddering old man, not much younger than Joe Biden. I'm accustomed to this, but I don't expect it to come from Joe Biden. Here's a guy who really stayed quite fit, and you can see. I think once he knuckled down, and today he was sounding a lot more like the campaigning Joe Biden we have known. But it is still an issue to watch out for. I was amused that you turned to Gavin Newsom right away. You know, Gavin Newsom is one guy who's been moved up more than anybody else in the minds of people who are thinking about who could be the next leading Democratic contender for the White House. You've got others, of course, Kamala Harris being one of them, and various others. But you heard a lot from these surrogates who also are sort of on the bench waiting to step in. It says something about where the Democratic Party is these days.
Well, and Clarence Ray just mentioned, you know, that this might take an epiphany for President Biden to decide, okay, I'm not the guy. Do you think there is anyone who could convince him it's time to drop out and endorse someone else?
If they don't have somebody, you can forget about the talk of a brokered convention, because Joe Biden has to decide himself to get out there and say that I turn over all of my delegates to somebody else, whoever, or turn it over to the convention. And I don't think Joe Biden is about to do that. So as long as he's not ready to do that, I think he's going to fight to the end.
You know, Sarah, debates like this are a longstanding tradition. Do you really think they move the needle much with the average voter? For example, folks who maybe are flipping back and forth between a soccer match.
Right. I don't, except that this one, I think the problem with it is that it reinforced, and even just a lot of the people who weren't, like, watching it, what they heard about it. And, if you're just sitting there, you're like, well, he kind of seems like a pretty old man, and maybe he's not up for it. And then you heard all this stuff about, and those clips are, you know, they kill him. And so I think that that's the troublesome part. Because, yeah, I don't know what the TV ratings were. Maybe they got better as the night went on because people were like, oh, there's a train wreck going on the stage. Let's go look at it. But at the same time, you know, it's still something that, you know, it's not good, because I think the social media, you know, outreach afterwards, these things, you know, they just reverberate over time. I think if it was just a regular old debate, yeah, most people don't really pay that much attention, so.
Yeah, I guess if your debate's getting numbers from rubberneckers, that might not be the kind of numbers you're trying to do.
Right.
The biggest question would be whether some of the people who hadn't tuned in but thought, oh, there's a debate, I better pay attention, and I haven't made up my mind yet, and they just see this and they think, holy smokes, and they get locked in that Biden can't do the job. And so did you lose those, and did you have a chance to recover? You didn't really recover last night. But if they see how Biden did in North Carolina today, you might think, well, man, he looked like the guy who was in the Union Hall here in Chicago while he was vice president, pounding on the podium and, you know, making his points over and over.
I think a big problem, though, is the sort of younger people who, they just won't vote. It's not like they're going to vote for Trump. I mean, if they're not Trump people. But when they see this, like, old guy, and they think it's, like, this other generation, they are going to say, like, you know. And they're already, a lot of them aren't really that happy with Biden for some of his policies. So I think that this doesn't help him in that way. Because I don't know if it changed minds, but I think the enthusiasm is where we're really in trouble.
I think if there's any upshot for Biden at all, it's we're still 6 months out, and now the bar has been set. So
right.
You know, he'll only have so many times to be on these big national spotlights again. But obviously the DNC coming up.
Yeah.
This was kind of percolating earlier this year, right? And he gave a pretty good State of the Union address that people were like, oh, I remember why I like that guy. I'm not trying to say that there's positives from last night, but maybe now he can, anything above what how he performed last night is seen as a positive.
Well, I think it makes Chicago that much more important.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They need to put on a performance here in Chicago, and if they don't, if they blow it again, they're in trouble.
Well, and speaking of some big Chicago news, we could probably talk about the debate for the rest of our time here, but turning to the case of former Alderman Ed Burke, he was sentenced to just 2 years in prison, although he did get a pretty hefty fine. That is far less than the 10 years prosecutors had asked for. Justin Lawrence, how much of a deterrent does a sentence like that create after decades of, you know, widespread alleged and convicted corruption?
Yeah, at the sentencing hearing on Monday, there was a lot of talk of what really deters future, you know, aldermen or politicians from doing that. Is it a long prison sentence? Is it the fact that they know that the feds are listening and that their colleague might be wearing a wire? And I don't know that a two-year sentence and a $2 million fine, that the judge kind of conceded that, hey, part of the reason I'm imposing this hefty fine is that Ed Burke is able to pay it, right? Mm-hmm. He's accumulated allegedly $30 million over his career, $2 million he'll be able to afford it. Listening to that discussion, I was a little incredulous. I don't think that neither of those things will necessarily stop corruption in this state and in this city. I think that the temptation that comes with power is maybe just, I don't think people act rationally when they have the opportunity to get theirs.
Do you think the judge was swayed by all these letters of support saying, you know, all the great things that Ed Burke had done over the years?
She certainly said so, right? And not just the, you know, I think Alderman Nick Sposato was the only current sitting alderman to write a letter on his behalf. And there were some other, you know, movers and shakers and former CPS official or heads. But she seemed to really be moved by the smaller folks, right? The clergy that wrote in for him.
Right.
People, nondescript people who don't have power saying, hey, Ed Burke attended my husband's funeral or my son's funeral and he took after us, and that is the side of Ed Burke that I want you to consider. And she really did say that persuaded her.
Yeah. Another big corruption issue, Clarence Page, the Supreme Court handed down a decision pretty well upending a corruption law that federal prosecutors have come to rely on. What did this Supreme Court decision do as relates to bribes to public officials?
I wish I was more familiar with that, but essentially they made a better defense for a lot of people who got caught with bribery charges. That's going to have a lot of interest in Chicago because a number of cases have come out of there that relate to this. Now, I bet Ray over there knows more about this than I do.
Well, and this will be directly to the Madigan case, who you literally wrote the book on. So, yeah, I mean, what's going to happen? How's this going to shake out?
Well, there's approximately five counts that are related to the ones that were overturned in the Indiana case. So the Madigan folks are obviously going to be all over those and get a full-scale effort together to knock those out. They're going to come back into court here, and the judge in that case is going to have them determine whether this case out of the U.S. Supreme Court is one that will cause a new strategy or what all is going to happen. And the motion that the judge or the docket entry that the judge had actually suggested that is the prosecution going to come back and have a superseding indictment that would retailer some of these counts. So if they're going to do that, what comes next? And the judge made it clear he wanted to stay on track for running this trial on October 8th.
Do you think the prosecutors are still confident in their case? Are they ready to make that, if they need to do a superseding indictment, you know, make some adjustments?
I can't believe they were just sitting around, you know, wondering about possibilities.
Right.
I think they probably had a backup plan all along. And so they're probably ready to go. If they need to have a grand jury meet, they'll do it, and they'll do it quickly so that they can get a superseding indictment out there so that the defense can argue it or look at it and determine whether they can move forward so they can stay on track.
Yeah. Some big education news this week, Sarah. We got word that some 600 support staffers at Chicago Public Schools have been laid off. What are the details there?
So, you know, the school system is facing a budget deficit of at least $400 million, and I actually think they're probably trying to balance their budget with much a substantially bigger hole than that. Every year, you know, there's staff adjustments. And it's one thing that's a little hard to tell is how much of this is just a school saying, like, oh, we don't need that aid anymore, or the budget deficit, the fact that some schools got less resources. Because this year also Chicago Public Schools decided to revamp the way that they give money to schools, so it's been really sort of difficult to understand how all these factors are working. But one thing I can tell you is that in the next month, the Chicago Public Schools has to figure out how to fill a budget deficit. And so this 600 teacher aides, there's going to be other things that are going to come up. And I don't know if it's going to be people or if it's going to be I don't know. The only thing that, like, Pedro Martinez, the CEO, has actually suggested is, like, maybe we won't wash our windows, which we're like, okay, how much is that going to save? And well, I don't know. I guess the kids would probably want to see out the windows at some
point.
Yeah,
like, one would think.
Bleak, but
check
I don't,
that soap budget.
Right? Right? Dickensian. We're not going to wash the windows.
But he was just sort of saying that he's, I think he was mostly just trying to say we're looking at things that are not, like, in the classroom related, but he hasn't said how we're going to work this out. And so there's a lot of questions coming up in the next month.
There was also a really interesting study that found removing police officers from schools didn't really change how safe students or teachers felt. It also found changes in high-level infractions. What did we find out from this study?
So, you know, the school system has been, over the last 4 years, removing police officers from schools. So it used to be the vast majority of high schools in Chicago Public Schools had one or two police officers stationed in them every day. Now it's only 39 schools. And so there's a lot of them that have gotten rid of them. And basically the U of C looked to see what were some of the differences in the schools that got rid of them as opposed to the schools that still have them. The interesting thing was that some people argue that students would feel safer without police because a lot of students don't really, you know, jive with police. But turns out they didn't feel safer without police, but turns out they didn't feel less safe either. So for all the people that said, well, the police make us feel safe. So it was sort of like, well, this didn't really change the perceptions of safety. Right. And so maybe it wasn't as big of a deal in some ways, because here's what you have to know is that even though the police officers aren't stationed in schools all the time, it doesn't mean that if something goes down, there's not a presence. And in fact, if you think about police notifications, they did not decrease statistically significantly in the schools that didn't have police in them. So it doesn't, so that would be the place where you'd think you'd most see a decline, and you didn't see as much of a decline. So
yeah. And speaking of police, Justin Lawrence, there's a coalition of community groups that says it's worried about CPD's mass arrest policy with the upcoming Democratic National Convention. What are their concerns?
Yeah, so they put out a preliminary policy a few weeks ago, right? And then they've allowed the public to weigh in and these community groups to weigh in and have issued a new policy. And there are some changes, right, that the groups are happy about. They say we won't kettle protesters. That's essentially where they allow them to walk down a street, and then we're going to come at them from all sides and bottle everybody up and arrest everyone, which is that's also led to a lot of very expensive lawsuits against the Chicago Police Department in the past. But I don't think everything's sorted, and these are the policies, and that doesn't necessarily mean that everything will be followed to a T in the chaos of any potential unrest.
Clarence Page, how worried do you think convention planners and party leaders are about major conflicts between police and protesters outside the DNC? Is that on folks' radar?
Well, they're obviously very concerned about it. And I remember 68, and you can see why. That was a time there when the police were literally out of control, according to the Walker report that followed later. At the same time, though, more recent years, you know, the conventions in, what was it, 96?
96.
They had, that was a beautiful convention. There was no substantial problem on the streets. It was very well organized. But the big concern this year, though, is with protests around Gaza and other current causes, some bad surprises could happen. So I think our police department learned a lot since those days, and the public has learned a lot. And I don't expect big trouble to occur, but everybody has to be ready for it. That kettling, by the way, last time I saw that was here in D.C. when Donald Trump was inaugurated. And they were rounding people up, including a couple of reporters out there. So don't get too close to police when they're kettling.
Yeah, we will do our best to avoid getting penned in. But we're glad we could get you all here without kettling you. We are out of time. So our thanks to Justin Lawrence, Ray Long, Sarah Karp, and Clarence Page. And we are back to wrap things up right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, additional support is provided by
And that's our show for this Friday night. Don't forget, you can get Chicago Tonight and The Week in Review streamed on Facebook, YouTube, and our website, WTTW.com/news. Now for The Week in Review, I'm Nick Blumberg. Thanks for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night. All right, Clarence Page, you wrote this week about meeting the late, great actor Donald Sutherland as a young GI. What was that experience like for you?
It was out of this world. I mean, I was a draftee, very bitter about getting snagged by Selective Service and all that. And I went to see MASH on a weekend leave. It had just opened up. And that movie gave me the spirit. If anybody's ever seen it, you'll see why. That movie really gave me the spirit and optimism to press on. Next thing I know, I'm out of Fort Lewis, Washington, now Fort Lewis, McCoy. And there was Donald Sutherland and Jane Fonda and some other folks putting on a show they called the FTA Show, which was a dissident comedy musical and all, an anti-war demonstration, but it was also pro-GI. A lot of FTA, you know, were all over the map politically.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm, and proud sponsor of programming that offers advice and strategies to enhance the physical and mental well-being of fellow legal practitioners in Illinois.